good day to be indigenous. Get up,
stand up. They are going to become more brutal.
Courtney Cup, he need cut again.
Because all the hippies were trying to be Indians anyway.
They're going to become more repressive because it's a matter of dollars and their illusionary concepts of power.
Hey, Victor.
We must live in balance with the earth.
And also with recent happenings at Wounded Knee.
I am awake.
Welcome to Native Roots Radio Presents I'm Awake, and I'm your host, Wakunja Hade. Hey, Kadagi, to all my friends and relatives in four directions, you are listening to Native Roots Radio Presents. I'm Awake, and I'm your host, Robert Pilot. That's my colonized name and taxpayer name, and I'm here with Wendy Pilot. And we discuss local and national Native news and events. And as you know, Wendy, Native issues are human issues, and human issues are Native issues.
This portion of the show is brought to you by Alliant Energy, powering beyond.
Hey, without any further ado, we got a jam-packed day of news. Why don't we get with Ogama with the news?
Bonjour, Anine, everybody. I am Ogama Ganuakwe. I am from the Red Lake Nation in northern Minnesota, and I reside in central Minnesota now. My name means strong golden eagle woman, and I'm here with some news for you on Native Roots Radio. As always, I like to start a little bit closer to home with regional and local news. So last night, and we've been talking about it quite a bit here on Native Roots Radio, last night was the Wisconsin DNR hearing on the draft environmental impact statement for the Line 5 pipeline reroute in northern Wisconsin. Wisconsin Public Radio did release some news of what happened last night, and I just want to say that I was a part of that last night as well, and it was a long meeting. Nearly 300 people attended the 10-hour-long virtual public hearing on yesterday, Wednesday, about the draft environmental review for the $450 million plan to reroute the Line 5 oil pipeline across northern Wisconsin. In December, the Wisconsin DNR released its draft environmental impact statement for the roughly 40-mile reroute of Enbridge's Line 5 in Ashland and Iron counties. The pipeline is being rerouted off of the Bad River Reservation in northern Wisconsin, as the Bad River Tribe has requested and sued the company in 2019 to shut down and remove Line 5 from the tribe's reservation. The pipeline carries about 23 million gallons of oil and natural gas liquids per day and spans 645 miles from Superior, Wisconsin to Sarnia, Ontario. The company's new 30-inch line is expected to cross nearly 200 water bodies, and temporarily affect 135 acres of wetland in northern Wisconsin. Enbridge maintains the currently nearly 70-year-old pipeline as a vital link for fuel across the region, they claim. However, most people last night spoke in opposition to the reroute during the hearing, and it stretched all the way into the early morning hours of Thursday. Some supporters of the project, of course, including Republican lawmakers, labor unions, and business lobbyists, touted that there would be some 700 construction jobs that would be created during the project, and also highlighted economic impact, supposedly of $135 million for the state, as well as income from property tax revenues that the company's pipeline would generate. However, the project is expected to include blasting and drilling at 139 wetlands and waterways to install the pipeline. The review also identified federal and state endangered species around the project, as well as high-quality waterways and wetlands. The Kakagon and the Bad River sloughs, which comprise 16,000 acres of internationally recognized wetlands, are homes to the largest wild rice bed on the Great Lakes, and it is downstream from this project. Enbridge is still going to have to obtain permits from multiple state and federal agencies, and the DNR is still currently accepting public comment for the project through Friday, March 18th. You can submit public comment in writing to the Wisconsin DNR by going to the Wisconsin DNR website. In more national news, from The Guardian, Native American tribes have reached a $590 million settlement over opioids devastation. The filing involves Johnson & Johnson and three other big distributors, as the Attorney General for eight states and D.C. are set to close the deal with Purdue Pharma. If you're not familiar, Purdue Pharma, run by the Sackler family, was facing charges back in, I think, 2007 or so for the deaths of nearly 500,000 Americans after falsely advertising their product OxyContin as non-addictive. They are still being charged in these cases as they filed bankruptcy, and the family themselves were not forced to pay any significant amounts of money. So that is still going on in eight states and D.C. They're waiting to close that deal to pursue further financial damages from Purdue Pharma. However, the filing that benefits the Native American tribes was filed in Cleveland, and it lays out details of settlements with Johnson & Johnson and AmerisourceBergen, Cardinal Health, and McKesson. All federally recognized tribes will be able to participate in the settlements, even if they did not sue over opioids, and many tribes have been hit hard by this addiction and overdose crisis. We all know that so many people in our communities are affected by this opioid use. Some companies are nearing the final stages of approval of settlements worth about $26 billion with state and local governments across the U.S. So this is a big deal that Native Americans are going to be able to get a slice of some of these funds that are available. However, we all know that it will not bring back the loved ones that were lost due to the opioid crisis and those that we continue to lose on a regular basis. So I want to make sure that everybody knows that our prayers are out for our relatives that are struggling with addiction right now. We're with you. Land back news from California from KQED.org. There is a conservation group that represents Northern California tribes, and they have been able to reclaim a big swath of the redwood forest along the coastline in northern Mendocino County of California. The San Francisco-based Save the Redwoods League bought the remote 523-acre plot and announced that they are transferring the ownership back to the Intertribal Sinkione Wilderness Council, or Sinkione Council, which includes members of 10 federally recognized tribes in Mendocino and Lake Counties. The Sinkione call the land Se-i-li-don, meaning fish run place, and it's located about 170 miles north of San Francisco in the traditional territory of the Sinkione people, and it includes about 200 acres of old growth redwood trees, which were miraculously spared by loggers along with second growth groves, Douglas firs, tanoaks, and mandrones. The forest is also inhabited by a number of threatened species. As part of the transfer, the council has agreed to a conservation easement and a covenant guaranteeing the ongoing protection of the land. So wonderful, wonderful news there. And then quick news from across the ocean and from Indian country today. Congratulations go out to Indigenous or Aboriginal Australian Ash Barty, who is a Garigo woman, who is the first Australian women's singles tennis champion since 1978 and was the first Australian player to reach the finals since 1980. Barty is now has Grand Slam singles titles on three different types of surfaces. So apparently tennis, you can play on different surfaces. She won the hard court at Melbourne Park, grass at Wimbledon last year, and clay at the 2019 French Open. She now joins Serena Williams as the only active players on the women's tour for tennis, with majors won on all three different types of surfaces. Yvonne Cawley, who is a tennis icon with seven Grand Slam singles titles and a trailblazer for Indigenous athletes from Australia, was a surprise guest to present the champion's trophy to Ash Barty. And Ash Barty is now a part of the new generation of Indigenous sports stars. So thank you, everybody, for tuning in to Native Roots Radio. I want to remind you to like and share the stream, and we will see you more tomorrow.
Wow, that was awesome, Wendy. That was Ogama with the news.
Excellent. She always does such a great job with so much good information all over Turtle Island.
Perfect. Yeah, we appreciate her and all she brings to the show. Up next, we have Robert Lilligren, CEO of a Native American Community Development Institute here in the Twin Cities. We'll be right back after this short break.
Stay with us.
J&S Bean Factory is a Native-owned, community-supported, cozy, artsy coffee shop which offers roasted on-site beans, live music, and baked goods. Relax in the beautiful outside patio. City Pages writes, voted top 10 coffee shops. Tucked into a quiet corner of St. Paul's Highland Park neighborhood, this coffee shop roasts beans on-site from the best coffee-growing countries in the world. Located at 1518 Randolph Avenue, St. Paul. The good stuff.
Bonjour, relatives. My name is Deanna Sandycloud. I'm from the Red Lake Nation, and I live in Minneapolis today. As the weather gets colder, you're probably going to spend more time indoors, but it's important to stay safe and healthy. The COVID-19 pandemic is still not over, and now the flu season is upon us. So protect you and your loved ones by getting vaccinated against both the flu and COVID-19. COVID booster shots have now been approved for Pfizer, Moderna, and Johnson & Johnson. And you're eligible if you're over 65 and if you're over 18 and have underlying health conditions or work in a high-risk setting. What's cool is your booster shot does not need to be of the same brand as your original series of shots. And you can receive a booster shot of any brand that's available to you. Children over the age of 5 are now eligible for a vaccine as well. So let's protect our relatives in Indian Country this winter and get vaccinated. Be a vaccinative like me. Find a vaccination site by calling 651-304-9986 or visit vaccineconnector.mn.gov. Miigwech Bizindawien.
When we heal from our traumas,
when we face our fears,
let go of our addictions,
when we relearn our values,
when we live our teachings,
respecting our elders,
cherishing and honoring our children,
when we honor and take care of our spirit,
there will be no room left for sexual violence.
Sponsored by the Minnesota Indian Women's Sexual Assault Coalition.
You're listening to Native Roots Radio. This is Spirit from Reservation Dogs. Get up and listen. Welcome back to Native Roots Radio Presents I'm Awake, and this is Robert Pilot.
This portion of the show is brought to you by MN350, a grassroots organization fighting for climate justice.
Hey, Wendy, I was just watching that Reservation Dogs again. You know, these 22-minute shows just fly. Yeah. What a lot of heart that show has.
It sure does. I'd like to rewatch it as well.
Hey, before we get with Robert Lilligren, I got to text this, and I don't want to play this right now, but officially Leonard is on the POTUS's radar. President Biden has listened to former chief judge and Kevin Sharp, Leonard's lawyer. Judge Sharp will show all why it is a must for America, most especially Native Americans, to heal. And that would be healing and bringing Leonard home after being in prison for over 45 years as a political prisoner, longest standing. I mean, they even have the person who shot Reagan and John Lennon are out, you know, and it's just an amazing, amazing thing. But without further ado, let's get with Robert Lilligren of the Native American Community Development Institute here in the Twin Cities, and we'd like to catch up and talk local and national politics. So I don't know, maybe your thoughts on Free Leonard, we can get going on that maybe.
Yeah, thanks. Bonjour, Wendy. Bonjour, Robert. Nice to be.
Oh, we somehow lost you.
We lost you. We can't hear you. Maybe you should text him, Robert, because we can't hear him. And let him know something might have happened with his headset or his computer, or something might have went wrong. Well, every now and then we have some technical difficulties, and well, we get through it and we do our best to figure it out, and we kind of move along and just go ahead. Ooh, that was weird. Sounded like I was possessed there, and I am not possessed.
I don't really know what's going on. Later in the show, I'm going to be talking about the Mexican gray wolf and their plight and what's going on with the Mexican gray wolf. They also live in other places other than Mexico. I'm sure you already know that. but that's what I'll be talking about later on in the show.
Let's see if Robert can check in here. Can you?
Oh. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Yeah, thanks, you guys. Sorry, I've been having audio issues all day with my computer.
Yeah, no problem. We have problems every day, practically.
Yeah, so I'm here. Sorry about that.
No problem.
Yeah, no problem. So, hey, as I started out the show a little bit, or not the show, but the segment, talking about Leonard Peltier and just your thoughts, you know, 45 years, is that too long? Or, you know, for somebody that really, you know, I don't know. It's we talk about freeing Leonard Peltier every show at the end, right. As you know, Robert. What are your thoughts to start the show off?
Yeah, no, I'm glad you did. And I don't know if you heard me before. I said it's about time. You know, I think you were saying, or maybe Wendy was saying, it's on the president's radar. There's some response. And you know, as I said, maybe the last show or a couple shows ago, I was very surprised at the end of the Obama administration that President Obama didn't pardon him. It just seemed like such a good thing for him to do, a natural fit. So you know, fingers crossed, and hopefully. To your question, Robert, I think 45 years is too long here. So, yeah, hopeful.
Yeah, we're very hopeful, and that's going to be a big push here for us on Native Roots Radio. It's 46 years is way too long. It's heartbreaking. You know, send out the emails to Kamala and Biden, and they want to hear from us. So, hey, I saw something on Facebook, Robert, that you mentioned, and I don't know if you want to get too deep into this, but there was a life-changing event in your life, and do you mind talking about that?
Not at all. Although I will say thanks for asking, because, you know, I do talk about it from time to time. And, you know, and it's kind of a happy ending story or all's well. But it does kind of bring up that the same kind of physical trauma and stuff. And sometimes I get kind of emotional talking about it. And I just, you know, I ran across that old photo and I thought, oh, it's Thursday. I'll put it up on Facebook. But, yeah, back in 1998, I was in a motorcycle accident. You know, where I should have died. I mean, it was, you know, I wasn't wearing a helmet and a car ran a red light and you know, it was heading to collide with me. And it was the most amazing experience. And, you know, I survived, obviously, and I had very minor injuries. I had like 36 breaks in my hand and my thumb joints had to be wired back together. And otherwise, I just had a couple scrapes and bruises, but it was just transformational in my life. And, you know, I was kind of this grassroots community activist guy, block club leader. You know, I had a few buildings I was renovating on the same block in Phillips. And I thought, okay, you know, I was approaching 40. Okay, this is my life. And, you know, I'm fine with it. And I'm satisfied, you know, doing some good in the world and stuff. But then after this accident, it had a profound impact just on my whole approach. You know, I kind of at the time thought, that was one of the worst things that could happen to me, and I survived. And it was tremendously empowering. And after that happens, you know, doing things like standing in front of a crowd of people, you know, and making a fool out of yourself doesn't seem quite so scary.
Right.
So I was so much more willing to take risks and move in. And it really was sort of a first step in my path to running for public office and having a public career. And it was amazing. It was an incredible experience.
Yeah.
Have you ever faced anything like that, Robert? Any sort of that life, you know, life threatening where your perspective changes?
Well, I think quitting drinking 37 years ago, doing drugs, and it's been a slow process for me to awaken. But it's interesting. I sent something to Wendy, and I don't know, Wendy, if you want to chime in. That and it really made sense. It was kind of about people really kicking it in when they're 60 and 70 years old. Do you remember that article, Wendy?
I do. Yeah. That said, like when you get get into your 60s or 70s than when people really kick it in, because I think that they realize that, hey, I don't have a lot of time left, and if I want to do something, I really got to get going. So
yep. That's
what you're kind of doing, you know, Robert.
Yeah, kind of.
Not
kinda.
Robert Pilot, not Robert Lilligren.
Oh, okay. That's
but you too.
Robert, you know? Robert. No, but yeah, I think that's part of it. But also, you know, I think it said something like Pulitzer Prize winners or average ages are 70 years old, you know, things like that. That people are getting acknowledged, and CEOs, and there's 60s
presidents,
to 70s.
Yeah.
Right. Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, presidents. I mean, we're baby boomers. We remember Kennedy, or remember of Kennedy, who was 43. And then ever since then, I think Carter was at a decent age, but Reagan was an old man when he got in. And now it's been a big trend. I mean, Obama broke the trend, but right. Wow, it's been a big trend of older people.
Obama was the first president that was younger than me. So
yeah.
Like, oh, okay. Things are a little different now.
And we always joke, Robert, I put this meme up that it's the same time from 1970 to 1917. Oh. And in same regards, too, I know I'm going off a tangent here, but Kennedy was the first president that was born in the 20th century, which really kind of blows my mind, too. And then you talk about Obama, who was born, what, in 61 or 60? I think 61 or 62. He's the same age as me. And, yeah, time flies, but it's really interesting that things do happen. Like, you're kicked in, and you're just a little older than Wendy and I, but I have, too. And I think when you do what you like to do and you position your life into doing that, it's not work.
Truly, truly. Yeah. And it's funny, before that, you know, before my political life and stuff, I was a bartender for 20 years, you know, and did a lot of grassroots kind of organizing and things. And then I had my little housing operation and my block and fill ups, you know, and my life now is so different. You know, it's never now that, and you know how it is, I'm about a year older than you, but as you get older, you have more perspective, right? You can look back over more years and start seeing these patterns. And that's one of the reasons I made that post about the motorcycle accident, is because now that I have more perspective, I can see that most of the important sort of directions, things in my life were really unexpected, almost like accidents or just really sudden shifts in my life condition and things. And so I've never been one of those people that had this plan. I'm going to go point to point to point. It's like you wake up every morning. It's like, what door am I going through today?
Exactly. And things come to you. Yeah, it's really, really interesting being at this age. I think one of the things for me, and that's part of being in recovery, and I know I don't talk a lot about it a lot on our show, but you know, when there's a crisis, you know, Noah and I talked about this. It's a Chinese word. They merge the two symbols: dangerous win and opportunity. Every crisis is a dangerous opportunity, and also I don't have anything to lose. And if people, you ask what happened, well, if nobody died, then it's okay. We can move forward. You know, we made a mistake, and those are the perspectives that I think you're talking about, at least. You know I am, because I don't sweat the small stuff. And let me tell you, when I was young, I sweat the small stuff.
All the time. Yeah. I was talking to my sister-in-law last week, and she's got a lot of life changes and stuff, and she needs to kind of get over things. And I was telling her about getting over fear, and she goes, well, how did you do it? I want to get over my fear. And I was like, you don't want to do it how I did it. I almost died.
Exactly.
I'm sure there are easier ways.
Well, hey, stay with us, Robert, if you can. We'll be right back. This is Native Roots Radio Presents I'm Awake.
Stay with us.
Hey, Wendy, what are we doing for dinner after the show?
How about we go to J. Selby's on 169 Victoria Street in St. Paul? They have a delicious plant-based menu that's compassionate and environmentally sustainable.
I'm getting their spot-on vegan Big Mac, the dirty secret.
You can pick up and they deliver within a 5-mile radius, or you can call them at 651-222-3263 or visit jselbys.com.
Well, you sold me one. Let's go order at J. Selby's tonight.
I'm hungry.
Navigating COVID while protecting yourself can be difficult. Fortunately, there's a hotline you can call with any questions. The Department of Indian Work St. Paul partnered with the Minnesota Department of Health to open the Twin Cities American Indian COVID-19 hotline. They provide information on vaccines, booster shots, and testing sites. Right now, booster shots are available to anyone over the age of 18 for those who are eligible. The Twin Cities American Indian COVID-19 hotline can also help with housing, food, medical, and educational support. If you or someone you know has questions about COVID-19, vaccinations, booster shots, or testing, please call 651-304-9986. Again, the number is 651-304-9986. The Twin Cities American Indian COVID-19 hotline is open for calls Monday through Friday from 8 a.m. to 5 p.m. Call the Twin Cities American Indian COVID-19 hotline at 651-304-9986.
Hi, I'm Anna, and I'm 8 years old, and I'm getting my COVID vaccine. If you're between 5 and 11 years old, you can get vaccinated too. Getting the jab might seem a little scary, but there is lots of good reasons to do it. You'll be protected from COVID, and you'll be less likely to spread it to people like family and friends. Have your parents find a vaccination site by calling 651-304-9986 or visit vaccineconnector.mn.gov.
Hey, Ogama, I've been hearing a lot about this term, climate justice. What is that?
Climate justice is recognizing that the negative impacts of climate change don't affect all people equally. It also means transitioning from a fossil fuel-based economy to a more sustainable future. MN350 is one of the groups that's pushing for this transition to protect our futures. You can even get involved, too.
That's great, especially since I'm concerned about pipeline projects like Line 3. How can I help MN350?
Just find them on Facebook or visit mn350.org.
Hey, Tom Harbin here, and you can catch me live every weekday from 11 to 2 following the Stephanie Miller Show right here on AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota.
All across the nation, we are here for our communities.
We're doing our part to get supplies where it's needed in order to fight COVID-19 together.
It feels good to be out there to assist our community.
I would like our friends and family to know that your National Guardsmen are always ready and always there.
Visit NationalGuard.com to find out more.
Sponsored by the Minnesota Army National Guard. Aired by the Minnesota Broadcasters Association and this station.
Turn to Auto Technical with your vehicle donation. We have families waiting for a car. You know, over 85% of unemployed are successful in finding and keeping a job if they have dependable transportation. A car plus a job equals a life changed. 612-919-5526. We have families waiting for a car. 919-5526 or autotech.org.
With a look at your AM 950 weather, I'm Patrick Lulia. Cloudy tonight with a low of 7 below, wind chills around 15 below. Then cloudy on Friday with a high of 10, lowest wind chills around 15 below. The locally owned Vinaigrette has been offering the finest olive oils and vinegar since 2009. That's Vinaigrette, Xerxes Avenue and 50th Street in Minneapolis, or at VinaigretteMN.com.
Hi, I'm Jane Fonda, and you're listening to Native Roots Radio.
And we're back to Native Roots Radio Presents I'm Awake, and this is Robert Pilot.
This portion of the show is brought to you by the Minnesota Indian Women Sexual Assault Coalition.
Well, hey, we're here with Robert Lilligren, and Robert's with Native American Community Development Institute in here in Minneapolis in the Twin Cities. And we're always, it's fun. We always just kind of have a conversation. And whenever I think of you, Robert, I kind of think about what I go through in my other job, and I really don't talk much about that either. And that's trying to meet people where they're at. And that's a skill, and that's something that's almost, it's easier said than done. What are your thoughts on what?
Oh, and, yes.
I mean, you deal with people all the time.
Yeah, you just said a mouthful, right? And, you know, sometimes I joke, you know, community engagement would be easier if all these people weren't involved in it, you know.
Yeah.
But, I mean, I am like grassroots organizer kind of guy. So whether it's, you know, planning a community event or trying to pass a policy, it's always to me about bringing the people to the table, more and more people to the table. And it gets messy, right? It's harder and sometimes than not bringing people to the table, but that's true movement building. And so, I just had a conversation about this earlier today, but as we're planning to go out and refresh our American Indian Community Blueprint that NACDI helped convene about 10 years ago, 12 years ago. So we've done an evaluation. Now it's to go out into the community. And it's easy to say meet people where they are, right? But communities are complicated. Ours is particularly complicated. So that means, you know, how do we capture the visions of our unsheltered relatives? You know, that takes a special kind of effort. You know, we certainly don't expect people to come to some kind of town hall meeting. You know, we'll go where you are. We'll go where you are and capture your dreams, your hopes, your visions for this vision document. But it can be messy, and, you know, and I'm still in government, as you guys know. And so I'm in our regional government. I'm a representative there. And so there's a lot of community engagement, community involvement. I represent some of the most lower wealth and most high percentage of people of color communities in the city, in the region. And so a special effort needs to be made to engage people who are busy trying to live day to day and, you know, feed their kids and work three jobs. And, you know, they're not going to come to a meeting or fill out a survey. And so this is something. And then at NACDI, we're a community engagement organization. So it's something we grapple with every day.
It's hard because I know when we first did, not did, but when the Wall of Forgotten Natives first happened, and there was a lot of community and there was a lot of things that needed to be smoothed out too. And I mean, in a good way. So some people, you know, come into this service with ideas of possible glory and making a name for themselves. And then there's other people that you never hear of that do what, 90% of the work?
Yeah, no, you're exactly right. And then sort of one of the tricks, the strategies of community engagement, community organizing is finding the people who have those big spheres of influence who aren't out looking for the glory. But if you tap into that person, you're tapping into 25, 50, 100 other people, you know, and then they can help bring those others. And I've always said organizing is the magic of one. So you're one person, you get another, then you're two. You each bring one more person, then you're four. And so on. It doesn't take long until you have a movement.
Yeah. And again, the people, you know, I think I've talked to you about this before, Robert, and I know I've mentioned it on the air. But when I interview like somebody like Madonna Thunderhawk, who was at Alcatraz, she was at Wounded Knee, she was at all the protests with uranium and the Black Hills. But you don't know that because she was behind the scenes taking care of business. And I asked her, you know, how did you get all this stuff done? And she said, which was really interesting, which is kind of the opposite of my other job, and I think maybe your job too, Robert, is that how did she get so much done was that less people making decisions. So sometimes we have to herd cats, right?
Right. Yep. And it's true. It's easier if there are fewer people, right? Like the probably the easiest decision making within government would be a dictatorship, right? One person making all the decisions, but that doesn't necessarily best for all people. And so for me, the messy part, you know, is the good part. I used to say, well, I still say it actually, sometimes when we're taking a controversial issue, an emotional issue out to the community, we know there's going to be anger and emotion expressed. And I always say, mobs carrying torches and pitchforks are my specialty. I like it. To me, people are speaking with passion and authenticity. And yeah, maybe some of it's kind of hard to hear, but how I feel about what you're saying is kind of secondary to the importance of you saying what you really believe.
Right. And as a teacher, I really learned, you can never, and it took me quite a few years to figure this out, you can never argue feelings because that's something personal and what they own.
Right. Right. Yeah, I was just thinking about this today. I testified in a city council hearing around the appointment of the new city of Minneapolis Public Works Director. The candidate is current MnDOT Commissioner Margaret Anderson Kelleher, you know, a friend, someone I've worked with for years, think the world of. And so she asked me if I'd testify. And of course I did, but I just brought this back because I've sat through hundreds, probably thousands of hours of public hearings in that kind of formal setting, you know, and I was always amazed at how eloquent people were that came to speak. People that never spoke in public, you know, they're shaking or whatever, but when they really tapped into their true feelings, man, they were always eloquent.
Yeah, you know what that made me think of, Robert? Wendy being a downtown city council and talking about pet stores. Wendy, do you remember that? That was pretty powerful, and I know you were nervous, but you came off like a champ, and because you were small, you were speaking your truth.
I brought a picture of our puppy mill dog Gracie in with me and held it, and I stood before the city council members of St. Paul, and I pleaded with them to please vote on a humane pet store ordinance. And there were many people there who did that also. I think I was the last one to speak. And it was really, I think my worst fear is speaking in public. It really is. And I was shaking and my mouth was dry and it was just awful. But I did it for Gracie. And when you do it for something that you really feel so passionate about, you just do it. And I kept just saying, you know, be brave. This is not about you. This is for Gracie. And that's what gave me the, you know, strength to do it.
That's beautiful, Wendy. Thanks for sharing that. And people, you know, people ask me sometimes, oh, does it make any difference? Does it really matter if we show up? And it matters. I mean, even if you're not going to speak, just having people that are going to be impacted by the decisions and actions that are being taken, sitting there looking at you while you're making those decisions, that matters.
Well, yeah, you were on the other side of that, too, as being a former city council member, to hear testimony like that.
Yep. Like I said, hundreds or maybe even thousands of hours of it. And I just respected it so much. I just respected people, even if they were criticizing you directly or something. You know, they're speaking their truth. And that's how democracy is supposed to work.
Right. And it looks like Nina posted, it's not about one leader, it's about the people. And we both agree with that for sure. You know, I don't know. I always enjoy our talks. We have a thing. We only have a couple minutes here, but it seems like we have some stuff revving up again here in Minneapolis with our police department. And I don't know. We need to see body cameras again, Robert. I don't know what's going on.
Yeah, we'll see on this latest one. And so for folks who aren't in Minneapolis, there was a police shooting yesterday, right?
Yeah.
It seems long ago. And the police were serving a warrant, and someone ended up dead. And so, to me, the easiest way to dispel any suspicions of wrongdoing is to show the footage.
Yeah.
Just show it. You know, I mean, we can do it in a respectful way that respects the life lost, but we got to see it. We got it.
Right. Well, and then the thing that, you know, kind of turned me is that the warrant was not towards this person, and this person that was shot had a permit to carry. So the plot thickens, and let's hope that the truth comes out quickly so we don't so we know.
Right. Yeah, there's been a couple shootings in the metro area. The one in Richfield earlier, it was at a school education center. And what was particularly distressing is that in the early tweets that came out, people were saying that the two suspects were Native men and they ended up not being Native men. And, you know, it's a tragedy, whatever the racial identification, cultural identification is for the people. They happened to turn out to be Latino men. Mm-hmm. But it was just so quick. And every Native that I know, as soon as that was going out on Twitter, were doubting that. You know, it's like sort of the generic brown person. You know, the two guys happen to have long hair, so I guess that might be part of it. But they, And instantly, I was like, the suspects are Native men. So that was a little disappointing.
Yeah, I'm glad you brought that up. A listener here, Nate, that chimes in once in a while. And Nate, I just want to give you a shout out. I'm sorry your family has COVID, and I hope it's not severe, seeing that you guys have been vaccinated. So prayers are with you. But Nate messaged me and said that he wanted to know about that from Wisconsin, because we're like in Wisconsin now too. So yeah, it's hard. And I guess we can just put some tobacco down and pray that things work out in a good way. You know, that's all we can do. But you know, our time is up here, Robert, and I really enjoy our conversations, and we've had, and we've been doing this over a year. We've been doing this 2 years at least. We were trying to wrangle you, but you and your husband were going on some trip, and we had to wait. And I don't know, was he blowing me off, or was he really going to come on the show?
Never.
And you've been on the show like 2.5 years, or even longer, I think, now that I think of it. But we really appreciate it. And having guests like you make this show, right, Wendy? And we're
absolutely
so happy.
So kind. It's always a pleasure. Seriously, my pleasure.
Right on. Hey, you're listening to Native Roots Radio Presents I'm Awake. And up next, our Sacred Animals section with Wendy. We'll be right back after this short break.
Stay with us.
Hey, Ogama, I've been hearing a lot about this term, climate justice. What is that?
Climate justice is recognizing that the negative impacts of climate change don't affect all people equally. It also means transitioning from a fossil fuel-based economy to a more sustainable future. MN350 is one of the groups that's pushing for this transition to protect our futures. You can even get involved, too.
That's great, especially since I'm concerned about pipeline projects like Line 3. How can I help MN350?
Just find them on Facebook or visit mn350.org.
Minnesota has the only original wolf population in the continental United States, and 80% of Minnesotans believe the wolf should be protected. Howling for Wolves is asking Minnesotans to respect our true wildlife manager, the wolf. Their survival is critical to our ecosystems, our communities, and even our economy. As highly intelligent animals with strong social bonds, Minnesota wolves deserve to be protected and admired. Learn more at howlingforwolves.org. Let's live and let howl.
The American bison. These powerful animals surround the weak members of their herd when threatened. I got vaccinated against COVID-19.
To protect those who can't do it themselves.
Me too.
And me.
Like the bison, we can protect those who can't help themselves. Get vaccinated today to stop the spread. Protect your herd. Brought to you by the McGizzy Communications and Minnesota Department of Health.
Stay healthy this winter by protecting yourself, your family, and your community from COVID-19. Get a vaccine or booster. COVID-19 vaccines are safe, effective, and free, and approved for everyone over the age of 5. Wear a mask outdoors, in crowds, and indoor settings, and lay low or get tested before visiting family and friends or attending events. To get more tips, schedule your vaccine, or get tested, visit ramseycounty.us/COVID-vaccine. That's ramseycounty.us/COVID-vaccine.
This is Winona LaDuke of Honor the Earth, and you're listening to Native Roots Radio. I'm Awake.
Welcome back to Native Roots Radio Presents I'm Awake, and this is Robert Pilot.
This portion of the show is brought to you by Howling for Wolves, protecting wolves for future generations. You didn't bring up the wolf picture there, Robert.
Wait, do it again. Whoa.
There you go. Thanks. For those listening to us on, watching us on Facebook. That's kind of fun that you kind of synchronized wolf howling on the screen.
Yeah. Well, again, you know, the pressure's on, Wendy. We've had a great show so far, and now you're up.
I don't want to mess it up.
No, you won't. And you've done our sacred animal section. We talk about this. This is our fifth year that you've been doing this, and I learned something new, and we have great sponsors like Howling for Wolves and people that are really out there doing their thing. So without any further ado, let's get going, Wendy, and talk to us about what you're going to talk to us about.
Yeah, thank you. Hi, everybody. My name is Hannah Jihi Hani. That means cares for them. I was given that name by my Dega Curtis. And as always, Curtis, I know that you're listening because you commented earlier. So thanks again for that beautiful name. I am a humane policy volunteer leader for the Humane Society of the United States, and I work on animal issues at the local and state level. And it's always my pleasure to bring awareness to all kinds of different animal issues. So I found an article today, which I'm is also good news. I've been trying to bring good news every day here. So over 81,000 people called on the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service to establish stronger protections for endangered Mexican gray wolves. Now, Mexican gray wolves are different from the wolves that we talk about up in the north. And Mexican gray wolves are found elsewhere other than Mexico. They are found in Arizona and the southern states, and they are a little bit different. The Mexican gray wolf, also known as Canis lupus baleyi or the El Lobo of southwestern lore, is the most genetically distinct lineage of wolves in the Western Hemisphere. At only 25 to 32 inches tall, the Mexican gray wolf is smaller than its cousin, the gray wolf, also known as Canis lupus. And that's, I usually talk about the larger gray wolf up in the north of the northern Rocky Mountains and the Pacific Northwest. Although their numbers have grown slowly, meaning the Mexican wolves, they remain the most endangered subspecies of wolf in the world because of compromised genetics, human intolerance, and reluctance to release more individuals and bonded pairs to the wild, which is kind of sad. The organization that called Defenders of Wildlife worked directly with ranchers and tribal members to implement proven techniques to keep wolves and livestock safe. And it sounds like, you know, just reading what happens with the Mexican gray wolves is very similar to what happens here with our northern gray wolves. Mexican gray wolves were once widespread from central Mexico throughout the southwest U.S. They have now been reintroduced to the southwestern Arizona in the Apache National Forest and may move into western New Mexico to the adjacent Gila National Forest as the population grows. They prefer habitats of mountain forests, scrublands, and grasslands. So they are a little bit different than our northern wolves. They look a little bit, well, at least at this picture, for those watching us on Facebook, they look a little smaller, which they are, and a little, I don't know, I don't want to say scrawnier, but they are awfully cute. But over, like again I said, over 81,000 people called on the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service to establish stronger protections for endangered Mexican gray wolves. During a 90-day public comment period on proposed changes to a management rule that determines their recovery success, supporters of wolves returning to the northwestern U.S. submitted an estimated 81,000 comments. Over 47,000 were submitted through the regulations.gov site, with another 34,000 individuals signing on to conservation organization letters submitted. Quote, Americans again voiced overwhelming support for science-based recovery of the iconic Mexican gray wolf. It is well past time for the Fish and Wildlife Service to listen. It is time for the symbol of the Southwest to once again roam free, said Patricia Estrella, New Mexico's representative for Defenders of Wildlife. The comments consistently referenced vital changes, and here are some of them. The U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service must designate wild Mexican gray wolves as essential. Since the beginning of reintroduction, wolves have been listed as non-essential, which must change immediately to give wolves the legal protections they need to recover. Rather than trying to manage the Mexican wolf population around an average of 320 wolves, which will be inadequate to ensure resilience, the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service should instead focus on establishing a larger meta population consisting of at least 750 wolves in at least three interconnected U.S. populations. There should not be a cap or a maximum number of Mexican wolves allowed in the wild. The best wolf scientists in the world say we need more wolves in more places to ensure long-term survival. The U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service must do more to meaningfully and measurably address the genetic crisis faced by Mexican gray wolves. These are rare wolves. And they need immediate genetic rescue that must be directly assessed, not by simply modeled. Genetic rescue can be best be achieved through a combination of the release of well-bonded wolf families from the Mexican Wolf Species Survival Plan, captive breeding programs, along with cross-fostering of captive-born pups into wild packs. Relying on cross-fostering alone is insufficient. Further released wolves should only count towards genetic objectives if they survive and reproduce in the wild, as that is the only way to ensure that they have contributed their genes to the wild population. The U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service must do more work with partner agencies like the U.S. Forest Service Department to require non-lethal prevention of conflicts between wolves and livestock to increase capacity for community outreach, to educate people about the presence of Mexican gray wolves and their protected status, and to prevent wolf removal due to livestock conflicts as well as illegal killing. And this is what happens all the time, and it's happening the same with our northern wolves.
Yeah, wow. That's those like the comments that we're seeing, they look svelte, not scrawny.
I used the wrong word, but yeah, they are awfully beautiful, and I think they're cute, but they are beautiful, and they're endangered, so we need to keep these animals in the wild.
Yeah, and they are our relatives. Let's not forget that. You know, many mm-hmm. tribes all over Turtle Island have clans, wolf clans, and we always talk about our lieutenant governor is from the wolf clan in her nation and tribe. So, again, stellar work, Wendy. Couldn't do the show without you. I really appreciate you.
Thank you.
Yeah. Hey, I'd like to end with these thoughts. If you're listening to this program, you are part of the resistance. From Chief Plenty Coops, the ground on which we stand on is sacred ground. It is the blood of our ancestors. We need to resist, divest, join a group, and run for office. You've been listening to Native Roots Radio. Thank you, Robert Lilligren, Ogamon, of course, Wendy Pilot. We're still here. We are the seventh generation.
Free Leonard Peltier. Stop line 3. Please get vaccinated and boosted.